And welcome into Smashville Live here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. We are streaming on Twitch, Twitter, YouTube, all those things. It's all presented by New Amsterdam Vodka. Chasen McCabe here with you, as I am usually every Wednesday night, and joined tonight by Predators legendary goaltender Thomas Vokoun. Thomas, how are you?
I'm good. How are you doing?
I'm doing fantastic. Appreciate you doing this. It's always good to catch up with you. And I want to start, we'll get into memory lane and talking about the Predators and stuff, but am I correct in saying you played in two Olympics in your career? Is that right?
Yes.
So obviously it's a little bit of a sad time for the NHL players because they were looking forward to going back to the Olympics. And because of really reasons beyond anybody's control with COVID and this pandemic, they're not going to be able to do that. They made the decision, and it's a tough decision. I think it's the right decision because you got to think of the bigger picture, and they're not going to be able to go play in the Olympics this year. First, what was the experience like for you, and why is it so important to players to be able to represent their country and do that?
Well, you know, obviously Olympics is the biggest sports event in the world. And, you know, to being able to, you know, represent your country, it means, you know, every one of your, you know, every person who helped you along the way, your family, people you know, basically pretty much everyone, they rooting for the, you know, for the team from your respective country. And it makes it very special. I mean, it's, you know, at the end of the day, you play in NHL, obviously, you know, a lot of people follow it, and it, you know, it's the best league in the world and all that. But playing, you know, as a kid watching Olympics, and you know, it's just supposed to be the, you know, the clearest sport event there is. You know, it's just, there's something about Olympics is very special. And I think you know, you already talk about it a little bit. It's you know, the whole experience about meeting other athletes and being in an Olympic village and seeing like how everything works. And you know, I, for myself, obviously, I don't know what the conditions or the rules would be on the ground in an Olympic village, but I don't think you know, the experience would be anywhere near as you know, good as we had, obviously, when I was there, and you know, people after me and before me, because you know, I think that was one of the best things when you know, you live in a village, and in every village there is these, you know, Czech house, Swedish house, and you know, you can walk around and finish, you know, all the athletes from the country go there, but you can also go there. It's just a very, very social and fun, you know, environment. And you know, especially me, the second one playing in Vancouver in Canada, where you know, hockey is obviously the number one sport for, you know, for the Canadians, it was something else.
Yeah, no doubt about it. And you mentioned that it wouldn't be the experience that you had. And that's something that I've been thinking about, even, you know, going into it when it was looking like the players were going to be able to do it, that, you know, there probably no fans. And obviously we know how much you all feed off of atmospheres and things like that. And I remember that Vancouver Olympics, you know, the atmosphere there. So in a sense, do you think that some of these players today that are maybe disappointed they're not going, or thinking like, well, you know, I want to, if I'm going to experience it, especially if it's the first time, I want to experience it the right way?
Yeah, I think, be honest, you know, obviously everybody is wired different and have different feelings about it. But, you know, I can only imagine how it look and what the rules would be and all that. And, like I said before, I don't think it would be anywhere near the experience you should have. At the end of the day, yes, it's Olympics and all that, but you know, there's so many things out of our control right now, obviously, you know, with COVID and things, people could, you know, teams could, you know, your teammates, some of them could get positive and all that. Like at the end of the day, I mean, I almost wish they could like separate the tournament and move it in the summer or something, or sure, do something like that. Because believe me, as a hockey fan, I would love to see the best players play again, you know, and kind of, you know, that's Olympics is basically it's the tournament where every country sends their really best players, even for me as a player and as a fan of hockey, you know, the experience and just to watch the games, it was fantastic. You know, it was in the middle of the season when all the players were at the top of their games. I mean, don't get me wrong, World Cup of Hockey was great too, but you know, it's different. You play 2-3 games and then you start playing. It's in the summer. It's not the same like when you leave after 30-40 games under your belt and everybody's basically, you know, hitting on all cylinders and, you know, you get to put on your respective team and every country is trying to put the very best they have and then you go at it. So, and like you said, I mean, you know, just the atmosphere we had in Vancouver, it was amazing. Even for obviously I'm not a Canadian. So even coming out, every game was sold out, you know, just coming out, I remember playing against Russia first game, I had goosebumps, being in in foreign country and just, you know, people appreciated hockey so much and building was full for every single game. It was amazing.
So I remember that one. And obviously you were with the Panthers. I think you were with the Panthers at that point. Yes. Still. Mm-hmm. But here it was Ryan Suter for America, Shea Weber for Canada. And so there was obviously that rivalry, you know, even though they were still teammates at the time. So that was fun. And when Canada and the U.S. met, just how crazy that game was. And so for you, was it Russia? Was that the one that, you know, for the Czech Republic, you get the most fired up for?
I mean, you want to win every game. I mean, obviously your end goal is to win a medal. I mean, you know, as far as you can. And I would not say, obviously, it's always, you know, like, all these, I would say, you know, in the past, the top six countries, you know, Sweden, Finland, Czech, Canada, US, Russia, you know, you always, you know, it was a measuring stick. And any of those games, you know, playing those games was fantastic. You know, obviously it's tournament schedule. So not in every tournament you get to play every team and all that. So we didn't end up playing Canada, but, you know, for me, it was obviously with the Russians, it's always, you know, because our political situation in the past and all that, but saying that, like, I had nothing but great friendship and memories from, you know, with Russian players from the time I play hockey. And, you know, on the other hand, we're very similar in a way, like we think and act and all that. So, you know, as an athlete, you go out there and you know, you know, it's the most watched sporting events you can ever be part of, and you're trying to obviously be the best and look the best and obviously win the game. So for me, it's just the atmosphere was fantastic being in that village, and you know, you have that free movement, like, you know, whoever ever visited in Vancouver understand how beautiful that city is. And during the Olympics we have fantastic weather. I mean, it couldn't go better, even with the result ending, you know, like the arguably, you know, the two best teams playing, and you know, and Canada winning in overtime. I mean, it was almost like a, you know, obviously the best commercial you can have for hockey possible.
So I talked to UC Saros last week. He was one of the guests that we had here, and you know, obviously he was going to be playing for Finland, and I but this was all hovering, and so we talked about it a little bit, and I brought up, I'm like, man, I don't know what it is. Like, Pekka had bad luck. Pekka, it just, he had the hip injury, and then they didn't go, and so he missed out. He never got to play in the Olympics, which is crazy when you look at Pekka's career. And I'm thinking, UC's got plenty of opportunities, but it's almost kind of like history repeating itself. Now he misses one because of it. Because by my math, you are the last Predators goaltender, I believe, to play in an Olympics.
Well, you know, it's been a long time. Obviously, it was unfortunate. The last one, obviously, the NHL wasn't part of it either. And, you know, it's one of those things you can't really control as an athlete. And I think it's, obviously, you know, we're in challenging times, and you know, a lot of people, their life got turned upside down, and this is unfortunately just part of it. I mean, you know, it's, I always think about, you know, the individual sport athletes. For them, it's, you know, there's nothing bigger than that. And, you know, as a hockey player, you have NHL, you have Stanley Cup, you have, you know, I mean, you have very good way of, you know, your livelihood, and you know, you're pampered, and you're playing, you know, in the best league, and everything comes with it. But like, you have these guys who train all their life for their one discipline, you know, yeah, bobsled or whatever you want to, you can pick any of these guys, and for them, it's the only chance, you know, they sometimes wait all their life for that. And, you know, for some of them, not, you know, possibly not being able to go, or, you know, the games not being obviously the experience what would normally would be, because I think that's one of those things when, you know, when you get there, you start kind of understanding what it's all about, because you see all these people from all these different countries, and, you know, everybody's friendly, and everything is about the sport. Like, you know, there's zero politics or any of those things kind of sometimes, like, you know, take us away from, like, you know, who we are and all that. So that part is very sad for everybody involved.
He is Thomas Wilkun, longtime Predators goaltender, joining me here tonight on Smashville Live. We will come back with a lot more. It's all presented by New Amsterdam Vodka here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. It is Smashville Live, presented by New Amsterdam Vodka here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Chase McCabe and Thomas Wilkun hanging out with you on a Wednesday night as things are currently paused, an extended Christmas break for the National Hockey League. Obviously, the Predators dealing with their own COVID issues, but a lot of the teams around the league are. And so they hope to get things going again. They'll report back on December 26th and then resume play at the Dallas Stars on December 27th. But we're having a good time talking with Thomas Wilkun about things going on. And it's the 25th anniversary of Bridgestone Arena, Thomas. And you obviously had a lot of big moments there and played there in the early part of your career with the Nashville Predators. What was one of your favorite moments inside the home barn that stands out to you? I think we might be having some connection issues with Thomas, as we'll try and get him back. There he is.
I'm back.
Did you hear my question, or do I need?
No, I didn't. It was kind of breaking off.
No, you're good. So it's the 25th anniversary of Bridgestone Arena. Hard to believe it's been that long, but you obviously spent a lot of time there early on in your career, and even coming back as an opponent. What's one of your favorite moments that maybe stands out to you about playing there?
Well, you know, I think there's, you know, a couple ways to look at it. I think, you know, from obviously individual standpoint, you know, getting into the NHL action, you know, getting the first win for any goalie is very special. You know, I remember getting the first shutout was very special. So as a team, you know, what could be more, you know, what could be better experience than when we first time make the playoffs, and, you know, we play our first the series against Detroit was amazing, just because, you know, what the kind of team they have, and us being kind of the underdog, and for years, obviously we waited, you know, almost 6 years to make the playoffs. So it was a very special for every player on that team for the first time to be in a playoffs in a Nashville uniform, and fans were amazing, just like they always are. And you know, after that, you know, there's, like I said, we had a good team, and it kind of, you know, everything changed. And, you know, obviously for years to come, we, you know, the hockey grew and grew more and more in Nashville. And for, obviously, what is it now? It's amazing to see what a, you know, what a unbelievable accomplishment it is. And in such a, you know, if you look at all these markets around the country, and these, you know, so-called non-traditional hockey markets, and you know what was able to happen in Nashville. I couldn't be happier. I love the city. I had such a great time, not just being a hockey player there, but living there and meeting a lot of people, and everybody was so nice to me. So you know, I always have Nashville kind of special place in my heart for that.
Are you able to get back here much?
I go. I mean, you know, obviously now with COVID, I mean, you know, I've been a couple of Preds Fest, and a couple of times I visit on my own to visit, you know, my friends, and, you know, I went to a couple of concerts and stuff like that. And you know, I'm not too far away. I mean, two hours flight is not so bad. But like I said, it's amazing to see, like, you know, what difference, you know, how much the interest in a team grew. And, you know, I was involved before COVID for 6 years in youth hockey, and just to see, like, how many youth hockey players, and, you know, we would play against the Preds and in various different tournaments and stuff like that, just talking to people and all that, and seeing what the, you know, because you can tell a lot by the interest in hockey in a city from you know, how many kids are interested there, and how many kids play hockey, and how they fill out these youth hockey programs and stuff like that. So, and that's been obviously the team helped tremendously by building those fourth arenas and you know, make hockey available to the youth. So
yeah, no doubt. So it's obviously well known. You experienced both sides of it. Whenever the Predators score, the goaltender is told by the fans how they feel about them. So what was it like for you to be the Predators goaltender and hear the other guy being told he sucks? And then on the other side, the first time you came back, because I think you even were asked about it, and you said, well, I hope that, yeah, I want to hear it. Like, that's a part of it. So what was it like from both sides to hear the fans, starting with the cell block, chant "you suck" to the goaltender?
Listen, it's part of hockey. It's, you know, players move around. You know, there's few special or lucky or both players who, you know, who stay with one team, and which is an unbelievable achievement. If that happens in your career, it means a lot, probably, about who you are as a person and a player. And but for your question, I mean, you know, you better get used to that stuff when you know when you're a hockey goalie. You're gonna get harassed and you know, when you play away in most of the arenas, and you know, people trying to make it as uncomfortable for you as possible, or trying to get you off your game. And you know, for me personally, I mean, I just trying to you know, I was always, you know, I was such a I don't know how would I even say it, like I had to pay so much attention, so I most of these things I totally block out of my mind, and you know, trying to just focus on the game and on the next shot, and trying to you know, analyze the situation, what's happening on the ice and all that. And so I wouldn't say those things never bothered me, but older I got, bothered me less and less, I would say.
It's funny when they do the, so they obviously have that with the goaltender, but when they do the starting lineup, Paul McCann, the PA announcer, will announce the lineups, and for the opposing team, it's always, you know, so-and-so sucks.
Yeah.
The only time that I never heard it was when the first time they played the Capitals, when Barry Trotz left. Mm-hmm. And it said the head coach for the Capitals, Barry Trotz, and usually they would say he sucks too. It was a standing ovation. And that's the only time I've never heard the fans actually do it. Even with Shea Weber, as beloved as Shea Weber was, it was still sucks. And so that always stood out to me of like, are there any players that could be, you know, that could get past that and not get the, and even Shea got a standing ovation with the video, but it's like, there's still certain things.
Yeah, I mean, you know, obviously, coach, it's a little bit, I would say, different. I mean, you're not directly involved in the game, and I mean, you are obviously directly involved, but I mean, like on the ice and all that. So sure. Maybe that was the reason. I don't know. But, you know, Barry being there so long and, you know, being the person he is and, you know, being involved in community for so many years. And I think there's a lot of people who know how much good stuff he did away from the rink and all that. So, you know, good for him. I mean, I you know, he's a great person and he helped me a lot in my career, teach me lots of things. And I think the most important part, I always, you know, felt he cared about his players, not, you know, what they can do for him and what kind of players are there, but they are, but, you know, also like, you know, he always asks you about your wife and your kids and how you're doing and all that. And, you know, we have like those little sensors as a human beings. You can really easily tell if it's genuine or it's just a kind of like a, you know, polite talk or something. So, you know, like I said, like he did so much for Nashville and all these years he was the coach. You look at today's NHL, I mean, it's an achievement in itself to stay with franchise for that long. And especially for, you know, one thing is when you come in, you know, you're lucky and you come as a coach into position where it's an upcoming team and you know they're going to be really good for many years. But, you know, starting as an expansion team with basically, you know, 1/4 of a payroll of over average NHL team to be able to stay for that long, it's an amazing achievement.
Yeah, it's crazy to think about, Thomas, of this franchise in its 23, I believe, years of existence that it's been, has had 3 head coaches, 1 general manager. They've had less general managers than owners, like 2 ownership groups. And a lot of the people that are in the front office, I'm sure you remember Jerry Helper, yeah, who's in communications. Yeah. He just announced his retirement. Yeah. There wasn't a ton of turnover, and you just don't see that.
No, and I think it comes with, you know, one of the reasons why the hockey is where it is in Nashville, to be honest with you, that's one of the reasons. And, you know, I think it comes from the community. I think it was a huge thing for Nashville when the local ownership group took over for them too, when kind of the ownership situation was kind of unresolved. And, you know, obviously Craig Leopold was moving on and all that. And I mean, you know, the trust they put in David, and obviously David being the only manager and all that, it's one of the reasons, honestly, and the community, the way people are in Nashville. I think there's a lot of new people and the city changed a lot, but there's still that like home kind of, you know, country, you know, everybody says hi to everyone and that good feeling. And I think, you know, that kind of, at the end of the day, it helped, you know, to mold the team to what it is now and you know, picking players not just based on how good they are, but also what kind of people they are and the team functioning the way it does and having support of the fans. And like you said, you know, I was on the opposite end of with Florida. We had, you know, yeah, I was here for 4 years and I think we have like 3 different managers and 3 different owners and coaches and all that. So not everywhere, not all the teams are like Nashville. And I think that's why the team find the support it has and the people support it as much as they do. And there's a lot of familiar, but you take Pete Weber and Crispy and all these people are, you know, they're all, you come there and you're like, wow, does it ever anything changes here? But, you know, it's for the good. And, you know, I think it's the right way to, in my opinion, you know, I think it's the right way to have a solid franchise when, you know, I, in a way, you know, when I was in Pittsburgh, it's very similar. You know, there was a lot of people who were there for many years and coaches maybe changed a little bit more, but other than that, it's been very steady and a lot of the people who work for the team are still there. And I left 7 years ago, you know, so.
What was it? You mentioned Pittsburgh. Hal Gill, who's part of our broadcast team, you know, always talks about his favorite teammate of all the people that he played with was Marc-Andre Fleury, and just how great of a guy he is. What was it like with playing with him? Because, you know, you two obviously were attached at the hip.
Yeah, I mean, it was great. He's a great guy. Believe me, it's like, you know, people always like, you know, people ask you about people and what are you going to say? You're going to say they're great people, because 99.9% people I play with, they really are. But he's just, you know, it's just the way he is. It's just like, you find these people, they're, you know, we're all different, but he's just, you know, it's just hard to explain. Like, he almost like, you know, he's a grown man, but, you know, when he plays hockey, he acts like he's still 8 years old or 9 years old. Like, he's so, you know, I think that's one of his keys to success. It's like, because he, you know, he really fell on hard times when kind of I was there and before, and, you know, I don't think I honestly with my mentality could go through it and survive that. And, you know, because you get to a certain point, you know, you play long enough, you won enough games, and if things don't go well, it's tough around the rink, and it's still at the end of the day, it's, you know, still your job. You know, you're in public eye, everybody knows how much money you're earning, and sometimes they feel you don't deserve it, and you know, there's other things, but he, you know, he just genuinely loves hockey that much, and you know, no matter when you see him, like, you know, he can really like separate the joy of playing from like all these other kind of things where, you know, like I said, you follow his career and you see people who go up and down, and some people recover once or whatever, but like, he's been able to recover in these like so-called, you know, not good situations and do well and you know, everybody who plays with him, it's you know, says wow, like it's just fun to, you know, because with a lot of people you play, yeah, we're all, you know, some people are into technology, some people like cars, some people like this and that. What one thing we have in common, all of us, is like we love playing hockey, right? Because we would not be where we are, and we would not make it that far without loving hockey. You just can't. It's impossible, in my opinion. I mean, there's maybe exceptions. There's guys like that, but they don't last long, you know, even if they're super talented, which probably they have to be if they don't absolutely love the sport to make it to NHL. But even if they do, they never gonna last long time. And for, you know, for him, like winning his 500th game the other day, it's amazing. I mean, it's amazing. Yes, he was lucky. You know, he got drafted in a bad team. It would become a really good team for many, many years and all that. But it's still to me, you cannot do it without it. I mean, you just, you know, you look at the comparison, Marty Brodeur, he was on a good team most of his life. So was Patrick Roy. It's just, that's part of it. But he was humbled many, many times. And I was there personally when his career was in a doubt. And, you know, from all the things, we had the same exact agent. So we're, wow, you know, two goalies on the same team, having the same agent, you know, competing for, you know, for same crease and for playing time and all that. And, you know, we were still hanging out together all the time, going to dinners. And he was my closest neighbor where I live. And, you know, sometimes we would drive together from, you know, from the road trips and all that. So it tells you a lot about the person, you know, when things not going his way, how he's reacting to it.
He is Thomas Vokoun, legendary Predators goaltender, here with us on Smashville Live. We'll step away for a second, come back with more here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Smashville Live, presented by New Amsterdam Vodka, here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Chase McCabe, Thomas Vokoun here with you tonight, and we're here every Wednesday at 6 o'clock. We either have current players, former players, coaches. You know how this works. It's always a lot of fun. So we were just talking about this during the break, and you spent a majority of your career with the Preds or the Panthers, but you obviously played with the Capitals, played with Pittsburgh, Montreal earlier on in your career. And so I asked you the question of all the guys that you played with, who was the best pure goal scorer that you played with? And here's why I bring this up. A few weeks ago, Chris Mason, your former teammate, was on our show, and we talked about even after his career was over, he would practice some with the team. And he said it was beneficial for him as a broadcaster because he could see a guy's shot. He knew Phillips' shot, Forsberg's shot. And so some of the new guys, he kind of wanted to jump on the ice with to see how, see their shot. And so that kind of sparked that question for me. I would assume you're going to say Alex Ovechkin because he's ridiculous, but is there another answer?
Quite honestly, right now, I mean, there's players who are pretty much on their way. We'll see what the history is going to look like, like Connor McDavid and all that. I don't think I play against him, but, always it is special. I mean, his shot is, forget the scoring ability he has, when you practice with him and you're getting hit every 2 minutes with his shot. It's just like, sometimes in a practice, you're like, I wish it went in, because it's like his shot is just, it's so hard. And it's just, you don't score over basically almost two decades now, with every year. I mean, it's amazing. And it's just like, when you get on the same team and, lots of times it's like, okay, like you can figure out people, how they shoot. And there's a lot of guys who can put the puck in the net in the league and don't get me wrong, they're amazing. But like, you look at the statistics, it's, I don't know if anybody ever going to be able to, to duplicate that. And, especially we talk about it. I mean, the improvement of the goalies in last, 20 years, I mean, it goes by, I would say maybe every couple, 3 years, goalies, get better and better and bigger and faster and better at things and tracking the puck. And there's literally very little space in the net anymore. And, and he's still putting the puck in like that at, I would say later stages in his career. It's, to me, it's just like the consistency, it's just like everything. I mean, you can score a lot of goals 1 year and then go down and all that, but being able to keep it at that high level he does, it's amazing in today's game. Stay just from an aspect of not just being skilled, but also, staying away from a lot of injuries and all that stuff with the style he plays. I always have reservation for his overall game, and especially when I was there, I as a goal scorer, unbelievable. As an overall player, I think there was players who were better than him. He changed his game a lot, and obviously winning the cup and even before when Barry Trotz got there, and so players evolve and all that. But as a pure goal scorer, no question, he's probably the best player in maybe, it's hard for me to say ever because I don't want to ever compare people. I never, I did play against Wayne Gretzky one game. Yeah. And he, I think he got like 5 assists. I got to say, I didn't start the game. So it was not all on me. I was part of it too.
Was that Dunham?
Yeah, it was me and Mike Dunham. I think he has like 5 assists or something. So, I don't want to compare like that. But like from people I play with, and obviously even now being seven years removed away from playing, he's still right at the top every year, and that's to me is amazing.
So you played with him and you played with Crosby. So and you were with them in their prime. I mean, when it was Sid versus Ovi, that was the rivalry. Did they embrace the rivalry like all the fans and media and everybody did?
Of course. I mean, they're both competitors and they both want to win. And, I don't think there's guys like they who wants to win more. We all want to win, but these guys have the talent and skills to make the biggest difference, right? So you know, believe me, I was amazed. Like, I know, you know, like when I play in Washington, you know, Ovi was amazing and obviously scoring and all that, but he was in that, he was kind of, you know, I would not say in a funk because he was still having, you know, 80-point seasons with 35 goals, which for him is like a down season. Mm-hmm. But, you know, just from like a skill and like all around the game, I'll be honest with you, I was not ever personally on the ice with better player than Sidney Crosby. Just seeing him every day in a practice and stuff, what he can do in full speed and, you know, not just talking about pure scoring, but like setting up players and making other players around him better. And, you know, there's something to say about player who's like that. And, you know, lots of times he gets bad rap because, you know, sometimes he does, you know, these little embellishments and people always, you know, kind of get on his case. He's a baby and complains to the ref. And, you know, we all have our faults. And believe me, I hated him when I played against him and he was kind of doing that. But for as a player, seeing him on the ice, I mean, one of my favorite players all time is Peter Forsberg. And I got to play with him in Nashville and he was amazing. He was force, and you know, like he was the kind of player you like, wow, watching it and you know, being like a fan, you know, you're on the ice with him and you're like his fan, and it's like, but when he got to Nashville, he already had a lot of health problems. He was older, and so he was not the same as he was when he was at his prime in Colorado. But like when I played with Sid, it was amazing. It was amazing to watch, and it made me practice harder and made me better. Just to, you know, to see the, you know, the skill level and the things he can do on the ice, and you know, when you play in NHL, you understand how hard things are and how quickly things happen and you know how difficult it is, and for him to make it that easy, and you know, most times to make things work, you know, to me, he was the best player I play, you know, overall, obviously. If you ask me for goal-scoring ability, it would definitely be Ovi.
How big of a difference did you see with the Predators when you obviously had Cliff Ronning, Scott Walker, you know, guys that could score, and they were the, you know, the leading goal scorer. But Paul Kariya comes in here in 2005-06, he had scored 50 goals at one point in a season in his career. I mean, he was a guy that was known for that. Sets the points record in a season for the Predators, 31 goals. How much did you see that offense change with him coming on board?
It was huge. It was huge for us because it was, you know, I would think he was the first player who actually came and signed like big name with Nashville. Yeah. You know, from somewhere else, choose to come to Nashville. And you know, we had great players. We have Steve Sullivan, who was very good, you know, point producer and very slick player and good player. But we never had that, like, bona fide, you know, superstar kind of guy. And when Paul came, it was, you know, it was a big thing. I mean, it was the big thing, you know. After that, you have Jason Arnott, and people start coming, you know, people start choosing Nashville. You know, they were sitting there and they had, you know, maybe five offers because good players get, you know, they get, there's interest in them. It's hard to find good players. When he came and with his work ethic and detail, like, I honestly, I think he was the most dedicated player I ever play with, maybe say close to Sidney Crosby, who was like with his preparation, with his, I mean, his warm-up was literally, I would not be able to either practice or play how hard those guys' warm-ups are, you know. And Paul was like, you know, he was super, super focused and kind of make all of us kind of better, you know, because he was on winning side. He was a guy who was a superstar in the NHL, and And it kind of changed the landscape for us too, you know, a little bit. Nothing we would, I'm not saying we would not work hard. Of course we did, because we were trying to keep our jobs, but you know, that got us a little swagger. And you know, like these good players, they're important to have, because those are the ones who make that difference in that right time. You know, you can score when it's 5-1 for you, or score when it's 5-1 for the other team. But like these good players, they find a ways to, you know, change the momentum in the games, or score when it's 2 minutes left. And he was the kind of player, you know, with his speed and all that.
He's Thomas Vilkun, former Predators goaltender. We'll come back, wrap things up, tell a few more stories here on Smashville Live on ESPN 105 The Game. Back here on Smashville Live, and Thomas heard that a time or two.
Oh, you got to pull that out, huh?
Oh, yeah. Got to hear that. Always fun, the game ops, how they would work stuff in. Back here, Smashville Live, presented by New Amsterdam Vodka here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. And yes, that song did play quite a bit back in the day. I felt like for a while, like that was your theme. And I don't know if Mace had, maybe Iron Maiden. I don't know if he really had one. Pekka had You're Unbelievable. I mean, they always would find these things to play. But February 24th is going to be a special day here in Smashville, because they are going to retire the number 35 for Pekka Rinne. It's the first time that a number has been retired in this franchise's history. And I think everybody, you ask anybody past and present, they would say, okay, yeah, that's the right one to retire. Now, you told, when after his, what was his last game, we all kind of assumed it was his last game. We had you on Darren Donick and Chase, the midday show that I'm a part of, and with Darren McFarlane and Willie Donick. And you were telling the story of when he was drafted by Nashville. You were playing in the World Championships, I think it was.
No. It was during the lockout.
That's what it was.
It was during the lockout, and I was playing for IFK Helsinki, and we play Karpat Oulu, which was his team. And you know, they had a Niklas Backstrom, used to play for Minnesota, play long time in NHL too. It was their number one goalie, obviously older. And we got there, and you know, I'm like skating around. I didn't know anything. Obviously, you know, if you ever hear Finnish people talk, you won't understand anything they're saying. You know, it's very, so, you know, they're talking about, and I just hear my name. I'm like, what are you guys talking about? He's like, well, we're just talking about you're from Nashville, and this guy got drafted to Nashville too. And I look on the other, you know, the other side of the ice, and I'm like, oh my God, like this is the biggest goalie I ever see in my life. You know, obviously Pekka was, you know, huge back then. And, you know, now it's like almost considered standard size, but even that, he was a big guy. But I'm like, oh my God, that guy is huge. Like I look like a little, you know, PV goalie compared to him. So that was the first time I saw him.
Yeah. And then it was 2.5-3 years later, he got called up. I don't know if you were hurt or Mace or who, what the deal was, but he got called up and he played against Chicago, won his first game in 2005. And then I think played one more that year. And then it was several years later before he was back. But it was funny. I looked at the stats of that night. He had 35 shutouts or 35 stop shots in that game. He had 35 in his last game too, in a shutout, which was pretty crazy. So
that is pretty crazy.
How those numbers work. But Mitch Korn obviously had a big influence on both of you, and Pekka talked about him. Chris Mason talks about him all the time. And real quick, before we get out of here, what did he mean to you?
So much. I mean, you know, I came from an environment where, you know, I was not necessarily sure, like, you know, I was treated fairly. You know, obviously it's debatable if the fault was on my side or on the other side and all that. And when I came to Nashville, I mean, I, you know, first I remember, you know, meeting Mitch and, you know, and just, it's somebody new, you know, and he's so unorthodox in the way he coaches. And obviously just,
the way he looks and everything, you know, you don't expect him to be a goalie coach and all that. And you know, I learned so much from him, not just from you know, how to stop the puck, but also like mental aspect. Obviously, you know, at one of the early years of my career, I got diagnosed with OCD and all that, and he was a big part of it. I mean, he, you know, obviously from his previous experience, and he had goalies who had those kind of problems before, and he, you know, he was the one who kind of, you know, I wouldn't say he found it, but he, you know, he was trying to explore every possible avenue how to help me, you know, he is emotionally involved in being, you know, see him, like I still talk to him and talking to him when he was in Washington and all that. He's emotionally involved with, you know, with the people he coaches, you know, he helps so much all of us. I think he makes you a better, you know, better goaltender and also, you know, better teammate and all that, because he always includes everyone. You know, there was times when I came to North America, I felt, yeah, I'm here, and they kind of brought me here, but I'm not on the same same playing field like other people. You know, I was not getting the same attention as the other people, and that was never the case in Nashville. And you know, he's trying to, you know, and you can, you know, it's easy for me to say, but like there's people who, you know, like I talked to Jan Lašák the other day. Not the other day, but a couple months ago, and he said the same thing. Like, he makes you feel like he really cares for you and wants to help you and all that. And it doesn't matter if you, you know, if you're the number one goalie, obviously making a lot of money, or if you, you know, if you're the upcoming guy who's just getting kind of his speed bet in the minors.
Well, Thomas, it's been a lot of fun to catch up with you tonight. Appreciate you taking the time to join us, and hope to see you in Nashville when this COVID stuff is all done, but hope to see you again soon. Appreciate it.
Thank you for having me.
Absolutely. He's Thomas Vokoun. Appreciate all of you for listening. Thanks to New Amsterdam Vodka. Stick around. Penalty Box Radio. That is next on ESPN 105 The Game.